Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing the mind-altering effects of simple money tricks.
Maybe we should have called this one the psychedelic effects of handling your money properly.
I know mind altering does sound like we're going down another road, but we're not talking about anything drug related here. No,
it's exactly. Just
truly implementing some of these tricks is actually going to have significant effects on your brain and how your brain thinks about money.
Yeah, exactly. We started thinking about this episode and we realized we were talking about some of these techniques or tricks that we can implement in our lives. But what we realized were so important about these specific ones that we're going to talk about today is the impact that it can have on our psyche, right? It can completely shift the way that we think about money. And when you have sort of this shift in the undercurrent and, you know, in how you view something, it can dramatically affect how it is that you go about handling something like your money. And so that's exactly what we're going to talk about today, buddy.
No doubt. All right. But before we get to that, Matt, you just recently told me about kind of this revolutionary way to dry out your phone if you drop it in the toilet, which almost all of our listeners, I'm sure, have done at some point or another.
Or not drop it in the toilet. I thought about you specifically because you're talking about your old phone, how he would just keep sticking the end of it in his mouth. I was like, for that, this technique would work.
And okay.
So, yeah, this is a great thing I came across.
Because most people, what they do, if something like that happens, if it gets a little wet or whatever.
When you hear people saying that they do.
Or a toddler sticks in their mouth, they put it in a bag of rice.
Put it in a bowl of rice or a bag of rice.
That's what I do.
Exactly. So the problem there.
And it works okay.
Is if it's really wet, it can actually cause more problems, right? Like if you've got water coming out of like the port where it plugs in, it can get gooey, cause even more problems. But I came across this tip and they talked about how, you know, those so when you get like a pair of shoes in the mail or electronics, oftentimes it'll come with those little packs, the little silica gel, also known as desiccant packs. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
the kind that you're not supposed to give to your infants, right?
Just do not eat. Yeah. This is not food. That's what it says on there. But somebody was saying how every time you get one of those, take it, throw it in a Ziploc bag or another airtight container like a mason jar, something like that, right? And then if you ever find yourself in a position where you need to dry out your phone, a bunch of those in a sealed container is going to be much, much more effective at drawing out the moisture from your phone than a bowl or a bag full of rice. You can actually buy these on Amazon, right? I saw you can spend like $8 and you can buy like 300 of, of the tiny things. Or the fact is that we get them for free. And so why not just instead of throwing them, you know, in the trash where it goes to a landfill, just take those and save them. And you were asking, well, what happens when they get full of moisture, right? Because it seems like they would be ineffective. And what you do is you take them, you put them on a baking sheet, you stick them in your oven at 150 degrees. For 15 minutes, and it dries them out. So they get dry, let them cool, but then take them and put them back in an airtight container, and then it'll definitely be good to go the next time that Ezzy sticks your new phone in his mouth and completely goos it up.
Yeah, you know? Well, I'm keeping it away from him as much as I can. But no, that's a good tip, man. And I think, it prevents some waste. It allows us to use something that we're already getting into our home in a way that's more effective than the current way we're trying to do things, or at least the current way I'm trying to do things by sticking it in a bag of rice.
Yeah.
A lot
of people do that.
Yeah, and especially with young kids. We've had to do that a few times. A remote even, too. Another thing that gets wet or gets stuck in a mouth. And so there's all sorts of things.
You're like, why is this so wet? There's a problem here.
Yeah, why is this not working properly? Oh, he ate it. That's why. So, all right, it's good to know. I'm going to hold on to some of these things. And it's nice to know that they're reusable, too. That's pretty cool.
I like to think of it as sort of like a first aid kit for your phone.
Yeah, exactly.
A little emergency pack.
No doubt. All right, well, let's mention the beer we're having on the show today. This one's called Bound by Time. It's by Edmunds Oast. This is a brewery out of Charleston, and we'll give our thoughts on this beer at the end of the episode. But for now, let's get on to the subject at hand. We're talking about the mind-altering effects of simple money tricks. And Matt, you know, we talked recently about bigger money moves and how those can have more of an impact on us financially than a bunch of small ones, right? Like maybe two or three big money moves, if you make those, it's probably going to mean more than 100 smaller money moves, at least when it comes to the bottom line.
Right. Or even one big move.
Yeah.
You know, if you pick the right big move, like housing or something like that, yeah, most definitely. It could seriously have a dramatic outsized impact compared to a bunch of smaller ones.
Yeah. Little tricks aren't always going to get us all the way to our money goals. There are, however, some small techniques and tricks that we can implement to handle money better that I think are going to make a big difference over the years. They can change, I think, our relationship to money in general. It's not just that you'll save $5 when shopping online today. It's that these techniques are actually going to allow us to rethink our overall approach to how we save and spend. And that's the powerful thing. It's not the money that you save in the here and now this week. It's the change in the way that you treat and think about money that's going to have an impact for, you know, a lot of years to come.
Yeah, potentially your lifetime, right? And, you know, the biggest argument, too, for making some of these smaller changes in your life when it comes to your money is that these smaller tweaks, of course, they can be more attainable, right? It can be really difficult to implement, say, a new massive paradigm shifting approach to your spending. It's difficult to go cold turkey and change your ways on a dime. But by implementing some small techniques and tricks, we're able to get the ball rolling, and those positive changes we make now will continue to have outsized results down the road. And then almost, you know, more importantly, you'll begin to view your money in a completely new light. And that's what we're excited to discuss today.
Yeah. All right. So let's give a quick example of what this looks like. One thing that we're not going to be talking about in this episode is like the savings app Acorns. It is a perfect example of a fintech product that uses automation to trick us into saving more money. And that works well for a whole lot of folks. Sure. They've got extra money in their savings because they let Acorns round up their purchases and save some money for them on their behalf. But if you take Acorns away, what do you have left? Well, a user is likely to go back to their old ways because that app hasn't fundamentally changed how they view their money. It certainly helped facilitate something, but it didn't change anything deep down inside of us. And they've essentially received monetary benefits without the mental shift that you and I are going to be advocating for in this episode. Not that Acorns is bad. Acorns is still good. And we think automation is still good. But we would say that there's something to taking more of an analog approach when it comes to some of these money tricks and the psychological benefits that you're going to see by doing so.
Yeah, I think sometimes we can become over-reliant on technology or these apps, which is why, yeah, an analog or a manual approach, however you want to describe it, but there are certainly benefits that we receive from those.
I think it's almost like using GPS versus the old school maps we have to use, right?
Versus knowing how to get there.
Exactly, yeah. Like, and there are places I should know how to get to by now, but I don't. If I don't, it's a place that's like 15 minutes away, and it's because
you're like, let me just pull out the phone.
Yeah, but if my phone is dead or something like that, I'm out of luck. Yeah. Trying to figure out how to get there. And so I think, you know, that's kind of maybe what we're advocating for here too, is to skip the GPS, figure out in the analog world how to actually get to your destination. And there's actually you know, reasons for doing that.
Yeah, there's deeper benefits that we receive. So for that reason, we don't want this to just be an episode that's about the simple techniques that could allow us to spend less and save more money. We're also going to focus on the mind-altering effects that some of these simple modifications can have on our personal finances. But we are all about automation. Again, you know, we dedicated an entire episode on it. That was episode 161. But sometimes it can lead to behaviors that aren't rooted in principle. And, you know, for that reason, we're going to get a little more kind of manual versus, you know, and less automation in this episode, because we're looking for that lasting mindset shift.
Yeah. And when you have a shift in mindset, you'll see the effects in your saving, your spending, and your investment plans. And these are changes that I think that anybody can benefit from, whether you're just getting started with personal finance and maybe you're new to the podcast, or you are getting closer to financial independence or closer to retirement, whether you've been handling your money well for decades. Implementing a couple of these tricks that we're going to discuss can have a big impact on your relationship with money, whether you're good with money already or not.
Yeah, and again, you know, the reason that we're focusing on these smaller changes and how they can have a big impact on how it is that we kind of view our money overall is because it kind of goes back to the psychological payoff, right? And so just like you said, Jill, regardless of where you are on your personal finance journey, when you're able to see immediate results, like, that always feels good. You get that small dopamine release by accomplishing maybe a relatively minor task, but those small tweaks you make can really add up. And that's the reason why our 7 Money Gears starts with the simplest task of getting money in the bank for an emergency fund. Of course, you get the immediate result of a little more financial margin, but then all of a sudden, you know, this deeper shift begins to happen, and all of a sudden you're a saver, which gives you the confidence then to move on to the next gear. It's all about maintaining that momentum.
Yeah, and what's great about a lot of these techniques and tricks is the fact that we can implement them as kind of like spending and saving rules. That way, during moments of financial temptation, which we all have, when we're really actually put to the test, we don't have to try and decide in the moment whether this is a good decision or not, because we've previously made the decision already. And I think that's really helpful to folks, because when it comes to the moment of whether or not you're going to eat dessert, well, you're going to choose yes unless you've made a decision beforehand.
It's like, but it smells so good.
Exactly, that you're not going to do it. It's helpful to have decided how you're going to respond during moments of clarity, like when you're setting goals towards the beginning of the year, versus when you want to buy something and your judgment might be clouded. When I'm smelling the scent of cookies wafting from the kitchen, it's going to be harder for me to say no to that than if I've kind of written something down previously and I've come to the conclusion that I'm not doing dessert this month, right?
Yeah, so true, man. It's hard to beat the scent of fresh baked chocolate chip cookies.
By the way, I'm not saying
I'm pretty much never going to say no.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying that I'm eliminating dessert. I'm just saying, like, you know, if someone theoretically does.
Hypothetically, for somebody else. Yeah, honestly, this kind of makes me just think of a budget. Well, you know, the reason you create these categories is so that you don't really have to think about it in the moment. You're kind of reaching the end of the month and you're thinking about maybe getting some more takeout. Well, it's going to be really easy to convince yourself to get more takeout if you don't want to cook dinner. But if you can look at your restaurants or takeout category, and if you've only got like $5 left, that's not going to get you very far. It's time to cook some food at home, maybe pull out some leftovers, but it's all about eliminating.
Or it's Taco Bell takeout.
Dude, I would totally eat Taco Bell if we had one around us. We're kind of like in this Taco Bell desert. Have you ever realized that?
You're right,
there are no Taco Bells near us.
I hadn't really thought about that because I wasn't worried about it, but...
Now you are.
Now I am.
Exactly. And so, yeah, in a sense, kind of these techniques and these practices are a good way to kind of remove some of that mental fatigue that sometimes accompanies making these financial decisions. And so, you know, this is why we're dedicating an episode to these simple personal finance techniques. It can be more effective to completely dominate some of these smaller tasks than to just slog away towards an overwhelming goal like retirement that, you know, might be 30 to 40 years away. But then along the way, they'll begin to alter how it is that we think about our money, you know? And so we'll discuss some of these specific techniques, some of these tricks that you can implement in your life right after the break.
All right, we're back. We're talking about simple money tricks and how they can have a mind-altering effect. And Matt, let's get straight into some of the tricks that we think can be helpful. Some of these you might have heard of before, but we're going to kind of give a deeper explanation for why we think they're important and why you should consider trying a couple of these tricks out. And it's not just, again, because you might save $5 today. It's because it might alter the way you view your money. It can change the way you save and spend. And one of the things that we think is worth considering is instituting a no-spend week or even a no-spend month. And this is a technique that can help you reconsider your spending through forced absence. At the very least, setting aside a week to not purchase a dang thing can save you some real money. But that time spent not purchasing can lead to questioning the way you think about spending money in the first place. And this is good, right? It raises our awareness level to spending that might have become second nature and that needs to be questioned in our life. Instituting a period where you are forcing yourself to curb all of your spending can really shake things up in a meaningful way.
Yeah, well, so that's the whole point of doing this, right? You know, you can change this up and enforce a no, maybe takeout challenge for a month straight.
No Taco Bell for at least a month.
Yeah, no problem.
Easy
enough.
No Taco
Bells near us. You know, or you can make yourself drink at-home coffee, like say for 6 weeks straight, you know? Whatever you choose, forcing yourself to change your spending habits reinforces the fact that you don't have to continue to do the things the way that you've always been doing them. So in this way, money challenges can be a great way to catalyze action and ramp up your ability to save. In addition to that, you add to a little bit of accountability, maybe some friendly competition, and you're definitely going to be well on your way to spending less money and saving more.
Yeah, no spending challenge with a friend.
Dude, seriously.
Makes it even better, I think.
Yeah, if you have somebody in your life who is striving after the same goals that you are, you're both going to benefit, right? Like, it makes me think of in high school, I was in a high school government, U.S. government class, right? And me and my buddy John, we're both in there. And neither of us were that great of students. But for whatever reason, we just got into this competition to see who could just outperform the other person. Dude, I have never done so well in a class in all of high school, even college, like in my entire life, than in that government class. I mean, literally, we were acing every single pop quiz, every single test. We were getting 100s. And like our teacher She thought we were cheating. She thought we had some sort of racket going on. But it was just because, like, him, like, we were just really competitive. He, like, lived down the street from me as well. And for us, we had this mental shift where these lackluster students all of a sudden were able to turn a page, and we became amazing students. And it all came down to how it was that we viewed that specific class. We wanted to outdo the other guy, and it led to us being able to do much better in that class.
Yeah. The effects are real and meaningful when you have, like, a little bit of friendly competition going on. So, yeah, I think that's a good way for people to approach this. It makes it more fun, too. You're like, it's not purely utility-based. I think a competition adds a lot of fun and intrigue to the process.
Yeah, it's a little bit of spice.
Yeah, it does. Some folks, too, have done like a complete no-spend year. There's an author, Kate Flanders, who wrote about her year of not buying new stuff in a book called The Year of Less. Matt, our friend Katie Wilk-Stanley, doesn't buy new stuff at all. Ever.
That's true.
I saw her fixing a pair of her old Birkenstocks the other day, and I was like just mad impressed every time, like with what she posts on Instagram.
Squirted some of that Gorilla Glue in there.
Yeah.
It was good to go.
Exactly. And more power to these folks, or if you want to give something that big a try, go for it. It's intense, but curbing spending for a shorter period of time definitely has some advantages too. It doesn't have to be taking on some new lifestyle mantra. It really can be just a week or a month that shows you that you actually do have the willpower to resist some of the things that were natural urges in your life. You really can avoid some of the spending that came so naturally. It's just important to prioritize implementing a period of time where you abstain altogether. And I think that does have effects that go beyond just the money you save during that specific period of time.
Yes. And similarly, creating sort of this mandatory wait period before buying anything new is another way to curb spending as well, right? You know, there are items that seem like they're totally necessary in the moment. But if we have a 72-hour rule, it can help us to truly assess whether or not it's a good purchase. Chances are you'll even forget about that item altogether, or it will, you know, languish in your shopping cart at an online store. But, you know, if 3 days later you still want or you still need that item, then you can finish that purchase at that point. And, you know, this kind of makes me think about our episode that we had with Joshua Becker about minimalism. This was episode 187. It's not about saving a few dollars here and there. It's not about saying that, okay, let's not spend money for a week, because then if you don't make any change, if there's no deeper change that happens in your life, well, you're going to make up for all that spending 2 weeks later. It's just like the economy that you know, economists are predicting that 2021 is going to be insane.
The pent-up demand is there.
Because it's there, exactly. But hopefully this period of time has allowed some people to truly look at their lives and say, like, travel's the big thing, right? That we haven't been able to partake in. But hopefully there'll be a lot of folks who are like, wait a minute, I'm actually pretty happy not traveling. Like, I don't need to go on that fancy vacation. And so that's what we're challenging people to do, you know, with either no spend challenges or at least by just delaying their purchase for just a little bit.
Yeah. And in the case of our episode with Josh Becker that you mentioned, it's more about living more of a minimalistic lifestyle. He's less about the money you save, and he's more about the lifestyle you want to live and being proactive and not bringing too much junk into your life because it clutters things up.
Right.
And so, yeah, maybe that's part of the realization too when you have a 72-hour rule. I don't need all this stuff. It becomes less about the money, and it becomes more about doing things intentionally and not bringing things into your life that are just going to weigh you down.
Yeah, there's a host of benefits aside from just the monetary benefits.
Right. If you can change your views around consumption, then I think we've got the potential to delay consumeristic tendencies, not for just a few days, but for a lifetime, to really make a lasting change. Let's bring up another one too, Matt. People should consider the trick of using cash instead of plastic when possible. You and I are obviously fans of responsible credit card use, but since we're talking about techniques that are going to help us spend and save better, as well as change the way we think, using actual dollar bills has a legitimate effect on your spending habits. Paying with credit cards allows you to score cash back and travel rewards, which is great, but studies show that it's less painful to swipe your card through the credit card reader, or I guess you're not swiping anymore, you're inserting with the chip, right? But
sometimes the chip reader's broken, though, and they're like, just swipe.
Just swipe, yeah. But it's easier to do that than it is to pull money out of your wallet. It feels more real, in essence, when you're pulling cash out. And feeling that pain is exactly the trick that you want to play on your brain if you're looking to curb your spending. You can also do something else, because credit card rewards are meaningful and they're good. You can keep a check register with you, but deduct the amount out of your bank account every time you make a purchase with a credit card. At least you're doing something physical to acknowledge that money is actually leaving your account. You're seeing your bank account balance dwindle every time you make a purchase. And I think that's another good way to reinforce and feel kind of the pain of spending in the moment.
Yeah, I don't write it out by hand like in an old school checkbook register. But that's exactly what I do when I manually reconcile my credit cards on Excel. And so, I mean, there's lots of services out there where you can link up your finances, you know, with your credit cards and, you know, have it all automated. But the actual process of me inserting it and typing it out and seeing that, like, oh, actually, that date night was really expensive. That has an impact on the next date night we take, you know?
Taco Bell.
it'll be Taco Bell. But we'll have to drive across town, though. To get that bean and rice burrito, which is, by the way, the cheapest and most calorie-dense item they sell.
Good to know.
I'm pretty sure. And I think it's the healthiest, too. Maybe not, though. I don't know.
Honestly, probably compared to... It's
like a fried deep-fried chalupa.
Exactly.
Or something.
Or the Doritos Locos Taco, you know?
It's like, is this a taco or am I eating just like a bag of chips with like a bag of Doritos? Man, let's talk about a way to help you make a better decision when you are making a bigger or an out of the ordinary purchase. An effective way to determine whether you can afford that item or not, a good question to ask yourself is, can I also put the amount of this purchase in an IRA? And if the answer is no, then we're suggesting that you might want to forego that purchase until you can.
Yeah, so let's give an example to drive that one home, Matt. Let's say you're looking to buy some AirPods for $200. I think that's what they cost, right? Roughly $200. Well, only go through with that purchase if you're willing to sock away another $200 into an investment account. So that's a total of $400 coming out of your savings. It can provide a more realistic view of your actual financial health. If you can't do both, then you probably shouldn't be doing either. And this is a technique, I think, to balance spending and investing for your future at the same time. I found this to be a really helpful trick that helps maybe inhibit my desire for the newer, bigger, more expensive things, because I'm like, man, if I'm going to do that, then I'm going to put the equal amount of money away for my future. And maybe I'm just not ready to do either, or maybe I am ready to do both. Yeah. I don't know, but it can be a helpful way to at least think about those bigger purchases.
Yeah, and if you implement something like that, what's great about that is that that's an example of one of those rules, right? It's not something that you have to think about. It's just something that you have to execute on. I'm not saying that it's easy, but if you've subscribed to that rule and you know that that's something that you want to continue to do, there's no sort of deciding, you know, how you're going to go about it. It's like, I'm either going to do it or I'm not going to do it. But then, of course, the long-lasting implications of this, too, is not just the ability to save a little bit of money now, but it does help you to rethink your purchases. It's like, okay, am I only going to put money away towards you know, this sort of special thing, this one-off, you know, out of the ordinary expense, or am I instead going to prioritize investing for the long haul? Just like with all these techniques, we're trying to introduce ways for you to reframe how it is that you're thinking about your money. And you know, the same is true too for recurring expenses. You know, when you cut a recurring expense, increase your retirement contributions by that same dollar amount. So for example, we talk about lowering your cell phone bill or shopping with insurance providers to get a lower rate. But don't just absorb that money into your life and start spending it. A great technique here is to ramp up what you're saving for retirement and to push those savings directly into a retirement account, you know? And so, for instance, if you go from a $75 a month down to a $20 cell phone plan, which is totally legit, like that's totally possible, take that $55 and then funnel it into your Roth IRA. Again, we're trying to reframe some of these expenses, right? You're not just saving $55. You're, in fact, saving over $100. Like, you need to see that my net worth is going to increase by 2 times that amount that I'm saving because I'm going to take that money and invest it. It's not just about saving. It's about creating a positive return as well.
For sure, man. All right, let's talk about another trick I think that can help us when it comes to how we think about our money. And another technique that you can employ is to set up a completely separate checking or saving account for a specific goal, like saving for a down payment on a house. By essentially creating a fence around that money, by siloing it off into another institution, you're also creating a mental barrier that's going to keep you from tapping that money for other reasons. At the very least, you can use something like savings buckets within your current checking or savings account. Ally has just an awesome buckets feature if you have an account there. But there is something to the fact of if you go in there and you're like, oh, that money set aside for my vacation this year, that's going to be really fun. I want to make sure that we can fully fund that. And you pull money out of there to buy some sort of disposable product now or a new item of clothing.
Like those AirPods.
Exactly. You're taking money from that vacation that you really want to go on. And so it feels like you're robbing yourself almost in
right.
another area of life. And you actually kind of want to feel that. I think if you do set things up in that way, that's exactly the effect that we're going for with this money trick, is you want to feel like that money is named for something specific and you don't want to ruin your ability to enjoy that future thing you're saving for in order to pay for something right now.
Yeah. And so by naming your money, hopefully there's this lasting lifelong shift that's taking place, right? Which is that you are approaching your money with a plan. By giving it a name, it means you have a plan for it, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you were to, like you said, if you were to take from that, you're basically going against your plan. And so hopefully you would feel some cognitive dissonance at the very least, right?
I'm robbing myself.
Yeah,
this is not
like,
cool.
Like, wait a minute, I had a plan, but what happened to it? And so we think that by just doing this the simple thing, it's going to allow you to be more effective at reaching your financial goals.
Yeah, by naming your money, it makes it much more likely that you're actually going to reach those more important, further off goals that you have set for yourself. And oftentimes, those are the more meaningful goals. those are the goals that actually resonate with us. That's why we called them out. That's why we dedicated a bucket to it in the first place. And we are, in most cases, not going to rob ourselves of that future goal and destination just for something small and trifling in the meantime, right? And so, yeah, I think naming the money helps us realize that's what we're doing, whereas that is what we're doing when we haven't named our money, but it's harder to visualize that. It's harder to realize that. So siloing your money can actually have a really big impact on your ability to keep going after those bigger goals that you have.
Yeah. So you said siloing and we're talking about naming our money. It actually makes me think of like
building a farm.
Yeah, it kind of does. It's like on a farm, like you hear stories about when there's kids and they like name the chickens or they name like, I don't know, the pigs or the cows or something like that. It makes it a little bit harder to actually butcher them and use them for what they're being produced for.
Yeah.
Because there's more of an attachment to it. And so aside from your dietary preferences, when you have money that has a name on it, it's a little bit more precious, right? It's a little bit more sacred. You want to make sure that you are being very intentional. Like when the time does come to tap that resource for whatever it's being, you know, set aside for, you want to make sure that it counts.
Yeah. Bacon's great, but it's different if it's Wilbur, you know? Like you just don't want to do that.
This is coming from somebody who knows nothing about farms, but you know, like I feel like when you name something, it has more meaning. And yeah. So that's what we're talking about here.
I mean, I'm just thinking about Charlotte's Web, like legit.
Yeah, yeah.
Wilbur had a name and Fern loved him. And yeah. That's a great story. But yeah, Matt, we've got a few more mental tricks to get to that are going to help people implement solid money habits for decades to come. Let's get to a couple more of those right after this break.
All right, we are back, and let's go ahead now. Let's talk about some actions to take that will lead to, you know, some more mental shifts that will help you to spend and save better, and just to have a better relationship towards money in general. And one of these that we want to recommend for folks to do is to, when it comes to financial meetings or talks that you might have with a significant other, make sure that you're having those meetings with your favorite beverage in hand.
Yes.
This is something that we've taken to heart. And every time you and I sit down and talk about money, we're going to crack open a craft beer. It's what we do.
And it's not that I wouldn't want to talk about money anyway with you, buddy, but having a beer at the same time just makes me all that more jazzed about doing it.
It makes us look forward to it. Exactly. Yeah. Of course, you want to do all the boring and necessary stuff like, you know, having it on the calendar so you stick with having these meetings regularly, jointly, if you have a significant other. But make a plan to share an excellent beer or a bottle of wine while having your regular budget meetings.
Or just not a Coke with coffee. I had one of those recently. Not very good.
Oh, really?
It's like a brand new thing in Coke. But if you don't like alcohol or drink alcohol, you should, you know, find another beverage that you like. But just not Coke with coffee. Yeah.
So is it called Coke with coffee? Because way back in the day in college, it was called Coke Black.
Yeah, now it's called Coke with coffee, I think.
And Black with a K.
It wasn't great.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
I know you love your Coke, so. But do get whatever beverage it is that's going to make you excited about that meeting, right? And, you know, you could even, like, play a board game or watch an episode of your favorite show afterwards. You know, sticking to a budget, like, that can be painful enough as it is. So at the very least, you can make your money conversations and planning meetings a lot more fun. Just this one act creates a real change in perspective to how most people view money conversations.
Man, I think we've talked about this before, but we're trying to get our kids to clean up. If you make it a game, then it changes the whole dynamic of cleanup. But
if you make it a race,
right,
they're going to try to beat each other out.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's all sorts of ways to make boring routine things a whole lot more fun. And I think it's the same thing with a budget meeting. And yeah, the right beverage can set the right tone for it.
Maybe even light a candle. Who knows?
You know? Yeah, exactly. Make it romantic. That's fine. And then like paying most of your bills automatically is a great idea, right? We're all about automation. But putting all of your bills on autopay might not be the best idea, and I'll tell you why. That's because we often don't pay attention to the bills that change based on our usage. I'm specifically talking about monthly utility bills. One bill that, Matt, I personally don't put on autopilot is my power bill. I refuse to do budget billing, even though they always prompt me for it. Mm. And I don't put it on autopay either. I want to feel the pain. I want to see how large my bill is. And then I want to take 45 seconds to actually pay it. Just this physical act has a real effect on like my interactions with the thermostat, my choice to put on a jacket instead of turn up the heat, all that kind of stuff, man. So
I got my long johns on right now, man.
Right. Yeah, exactly. there's something about like the smoothed out nature of budget billing and having it on automatic pilot, having those payments just come out of your account automatically, where if you're one step removed from the actual money it's costing you. And so this is one instance where I say, no way to automation, and I'm going to pay that one every single month because I want to see what I'm using and I want to feel it viscerally. And there is a direct impact in my behavior because of it.
Yeah, oftentimes things like budget billing or over-relying on an app or something like that can desensitize us either to what we're spending, or it can completely remove some of those benefits that we would receive by looking at the price, right? And one of the benefits in this case too is just using less energy overall. Another trick that we want to recommend for folks to consider is to think of the sticker price in terms of hours of work to buy something that you're interested in buying, right? And so this one requires you to know your hourly rate. We did an entire episode on this. This was episode 99. Knowing your hourly rate is crucial to be able to do the quick math. But thinking of a $120 purchase, say, as maybe half of your workday, that might put things in starker terms. You know, you're going to ask yourself, do I really want that gadget or that new clothing item if it takes that much effort for me to actually receive it?
Yeah, we talked about the difference between paying in cash and paying with a credit card. Paying with a credit card is easier, right? It feels, you don't feel that you're being parted with your money in the same way. Well, you feel even more like you're being parted with your money when you think about it in terms of how many hours of work it took you to be able to buy that item, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe you're going to think twice about that sweet backpack because you're like, dang it, that's 3.5 hours of work and it's not worth that. It sounds like it's worth $80, but it's not worth 3.5 hours of your life. And so I think, yeah, thinking about it in those terms can be helpful. On that note too, Matt, the stranger test is another technique to help curb consumption. We talked recently with Lisa Rowan and she had a book on money hacks. That was episode 307. Imagine a stranger handing you cash instead of the item you're attempting to purchase. That can provide helpful framing that can be instrumental in curbing impulse purchases. So like, do you want the $80 backpack or do you want $80? And usually, almost always, I'm going to take the cash. And so that means that I shouldn't buy the item. And that is just one more helpful trick in helping us curb spending and rethink our relationship towards money in general.
Yeah, of course, you're going to save that $80 right there on the spot, like in that one instance, right? But by doing that over and over, I think the lasting benefit that you receive is the ability to see money for what it's actually worth versus something that we just exchange for stuff that we then exchange for our time, and then that's the rest of your life.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, we generally just become a little more skeptical about using our money. We're yes. more judicious, you know,
yeah.
before we just like toss it out there on any random thing that crosses our Instagram feed.
100%, man. Yeah. One other way that we want to shift how it is that people think about their money is we want to encourage folks to stop saving for retirement. Instead, save for your future self. You know, semantics are at play here a little bit, but one of the biggest hurdles that I think keeps people from investing enough for retirement is that they do a poor job at connecting what feels like sacrifice now to the benefits that they would receive from that money down the road, right? And so saving for retirement, it almost feels like a tax or even this expense with very little upside because we don't receive anything right now,
well,
right?
Part of me is like, am I actually ever really going to get that old? I mean, I know that I am, but it's hard to imagine
It's hard
that.
To make that connection. I agree, dude.
I know I'm going to have massive wrinkles one of these days, but like I'm just not quite there yet. I mean, I got a few. The bags under the eyes for sure, but...
Yeah, with time. You know? And so instead, you know, we want individuals to imagine like that they are saving for their future selves. You know, it's not like this separate person. It's not somebody else that you're saving money for. It's who you are right now, just a little bit older, and it's going to happen sooner than you think. You know, we've talked about the Face app. You're able to, I don't know if it's still out there, put out there by the Russians, right?
Yeah.
But the ability to use these different apps to take a selfie and to make yourself look, you know, 50 years older is amazing. That alone right there can be the visual shock that you need to get yourself to do the right thing.
Yeah, I think there was like a fidelity study or something, Matt, where they did that with people who are saving for their retirement who are younger. And it really did have an impact on how much they decided to put
yes.
away for the future because they're like, oh, that's what I'm gonna look like in 30, 40 years. And I need to start saving for that dude, because or that gal, like whoever it is. Like I need to start thinking about my future self, and postponing it is only hurting that person who is going to be me someday.
Yeah, and that's probably why too. The older we get, the more likely we are to save, because we're closer to being those people. Right. We're like, oh, actually, I am getting kind of old.
But then it's just less effective, right? So the earlier we start, yes, it's so much more effective.
Yes.
So we have to kind of get that visual representation of what we're gonna look like. You and I did that, and we. Decent looking.
I thought we looked real good, man.
70-year-olds.
If I look like, I mean, I don't know, there's more like 85-year-olds. Like, those guys were old. But if I look that good when I'm 85, I'm going to be happy.
Yeah, for sure. And it's amazing, I think, how just like a little sleight of hand can make us feel like someone has powers that aren't of this world. I'm talking about like magicians, right? Like David Blaine. I mean, that guy does some incredible stuff. And it's not like he actually has magical powers that are from another universe.
I don't know, man. I still don't know how he floats.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah. But it's incredible. Right?
The levitation trick is pretty good.
I think the same kind of thing can be true of our personal finances, though. Like, you can go David Blaine on your finances. These tricks and techniques aren't mind-blowing when you look at them on the surface. It's like, have a no-spend month. Okay, cool. Great tip, Matt and Joel. I mean, it's not something that we're not the first people to have ever thought of that, right? But if you implement just a couple of these, it can make a major difference over time in how you think about money in general and your perspective on the stuff. It's not about the money that you don't spend on that one purchase or the one no-spend month that you implement. It's about completely changing the way you view money altogether with a few simple tricks and techniques that are going to have a positive impact on you for years and years to come. And so, yeah, I don't know how David Blaine floats, but I do know how you can change the way you think about money. And it really is through using some of these techniques, trying some of these things out, implementing them into your life and seeing how they work out, seeing if it does gradually start to change the way you think about saving, spending, and investing.
Yeah, dude, could not agree more. Here's the thing too. There are tons of tricks out there that we didn't mention, right? And so if there are things that you are implementing in your life, ask yourself, you know, obviously there's probably going to be a monetary benefit that you're receiving right now, but then go another level deeper. Like, either ask yourself why it is that you're doing this, or ask yourself what is the other additional mental benefit that you are receiving by doing that. And hopefully you will find that there's something else that could lead to lasting change for the rest of your life, not just within that one purchase or that one ability to save a little bit more money.
No doubt, Matt. Like, as we were kind of coming to this episode, thinking about how we were going to talk about this topic, you and I decided that it was important to get a little more meta, go a little deeper when it comes to some of these money tricks. Like, they are on the surface simple, but at their root, they have a long-lasting, deep impact. And I know they've had that on us, man. Like, my thinking about money, although it might be weird, it might be like crazy to some people, it is in large part because I've tried some of these tricks, I've implemented them in my life, and it's like, man, I think about the stuff differently. Like, it has, every time I spend, it feels different.
Yeah, and that's because, right, you know, these simple financial moves and these things that we can do, these tricks, they're anchored to like these deeper financial truths. And those are the truths that we want to point people to.
For sure, man. All right, well, let's get back to the beer that we had on the show, because obviously having a beverage in hand while you talk about money, this makes it much better. Today on the show, we had a beer called Bound by Time. It's by Edmunds Oast. Matt, what were your thoughts on this IPA?
It was so very good. My first sip, all I could think of was canned pineapple juice.
Oh.
I don't know why. I think it quickly faded after that, but I was really thirsty. And sometimes when you sit down and you have a beer and you're pretty thirsty, it tastes different to you. I feel like they taste even better when you're a little dehydrated. Maybe not the best thing from a health perspective, but riding around on the bike a little bit. I did some of that today. I didn't replace those fluids with my hot water that's over there in my thermos.
Did it with a beer instead.
Did it with a beer instead. But it was really good, man. Yeah, I'm glad this was one you and I got to enjoy. Edmunds Oast, they're just making some really good stuff.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to having more by them. Like, we just started getting their stuff in Atlanta, and this one was really good, man. It was really smooth. I didn't necessarily get massive pineapple flavors out of it. It tasted like a really good IPA that just had just an incredible smoothness to it. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah, almost like it had lactose in it, but I don't think it does.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think it's honestly probably an IPA that almost anybody could get behind, because it's not super bitter. It's not super juicy. It's not super piney. It doesn't have any
not
of
super
those.
Super hoppy. Yeah. Just like a great, smooth drinking IPA.
Yeah, for sure. Very flavorful, but still just incredibly smooth in its delivery too. So yeah, glad we got to have this one together. But that's going to do it for this episode. For folks who want show notes for this episode, just go to our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And if you've listened to the show for a while, we would love it if you were to head over to Apple Podcasts, leave us a solid rating and review over there. And if you've already done that, make sure to let a friend or a family member know, or someone who might want to join you on a money challenge, maybe a no-spend week or month, something like that. And as always, always, thanks in advance.
All right, man. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.